Hi, my name is Andra Stanoyo, and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show here on UK Health Radio, the real feel-good radio. Even in normal times, domestic violence is a crisis. And while the current situation is unprecedented and horrific, it wasn't inevitable. A recent poll by Amnesty UK found that 72% of people think the government should do more to protect domestic abuse survivors. 65% think it should provide more funding to support them during the pandemic. The government has announced a 76 million package to support the most vulnerable in society, including victims of domestic violence and modern slavery, rough sleepers, and vulnerable children. Acknowledging that the coronavirus lockdown is making it harder for people in often dangerous situations to seek help, Community Secretary said victims of domestic abuse would get more support with housing. In the most recent episode of the Healthy Debate Show, we discussed about domestic violence, the myths related to that, and we touched base on recovery. Therefore, today we will continue the conversation about domestic violence, but from a psychological perspective. I am joined by Belinder Walia, a psychotherapist, rapid transformational practitioner, writer, and mindfulness coach. Welcome back, Belinder, to the Healthy Debate Show.
Thank you for the wonderful introduction, Andrea. And it's always a pleasure to speak with you. I am delighted to join you today.
Belinder, please tell us more about your work as a psychotherapist.
Oh, I'm the founder of Serene Lifestyles, which is an online psychotherapy practice where I individually cater programs and packages using a variety and a combination of modalities. So I go to the root cause of the issue and bring it to the surface for the client or referred patient, and using self-psychology to analyze what it is from their past that has impacted their life and the issue they have at that moment. And we then work on reprogramming the mind and changing those old limiting beliefs that have held them back and embedding new positive thoughts and beliefs by transforming their mindset and transforming their life using rapid transformational therapy.
Thank you, Belinder, for the very insightful information about your work as a psychotherapist. I think it's important the fact that you mentioned limited beliefs, and hopefully we can talk about that in the context of domestic violence. But before we do that, let's clarify, what is domestic violence?
Well, domestic violence and abuse is categorized by most in the same way in most parts of the world. However, there are only differences in age in certain countries. But here in the UK, the Metropolitan Police have described it as a experience or habits of incidents where one individual is controlling or using threatening behaviour upon another. And the violence or abuse is usually those who use coercive behaviour and is considered domestic from the age of 16 and above. So most domestic violence and abusive behavior is between persons that have an intimidating partnership or a family relationship despite their gender or sexuality. But the definition can include honor-based abuse and forced marriages, which is common amongst certain ethnic groups, and also domestic violence or abuse can involve anyone regardless of their ethnicity, age, gender, sexuality, or social background. What it actually is a suffering from physical, psychological, sexual, and financial abuse, which I only learned about myself a couple of years ago, but financial abuse can be considered as domestic abuse. And anything that may be seen as a threat, intimidation, where the other members of the family or partner have continuously mistreated the person, and that person can and will be considered a victim of domestic violence or abuse.
I know that the knowledge on physical abuse, sexual abuse are pretty widely spread. However, what are other types of abuse? You briefly mentioned some of them, but let's put them in categories, please.
So where I've mentioned psychological abuse, when somebody is abusing you with your emotionally, so there's that entails a lot of mental and emotional abuse. And also you have sexual abuse, which is quite evident and obvious. And then you've got the financial abuse that I mentioned, which a lot of people are not aware of. And this is usually, it has a major impact on people that are elderly. But I know that we can go into detail about that later on, perhaps, and I can explain that further about the financial abuse and how some people manipulate the elders for financial gain. And it's not just the elders, I know, but it would be their wills that have been changed, and power of attorney and titles and policies and that sort of thing.
So how do we recognize the signs of, let's say, physical abuse? I would like us to have a look at every single type of abuse and try to dissect it as much as possible. So we do understand cuts, we do understand maybe bruising, but what are other signs that will indicate that we are currently are being part of an abusive relationship, physical abusing relationship?
As you mentioned, Andrea, apart from the obvious visible signs of one having cuts or bruises that can be seen on a person's exposed body, it is not always easy to tell what the signs and symptoms are immediately. I mean, some people do not even realize that they are being abused if it's not the obvious. So you see, often, not always, but often people are too afraid to speak out and share what their fear is. And the feeling of being afraid, alone, isolated and confused is usually something that is an emotion or emotions that one doesn't always want to disclose. And the reason is because often the person is ashamed, and sometimes they may have physical ailments that they brush off the reasons why those physical ailments might be present, even having anxiety, the stress, the tension, the depression. These things may be covered up with other reasons. So I don't like to use the word excuses, but other reasons that cannot or are being denied is the word I should use. And domestic violence or abuse is a suffering that one feels they have to undertake in silence. And there may be children involved who have unfortunately witnessed the atrocity and may also suffer. And that's why the signs and symptoms are not always visible or easy to come across, because unfortunately many are in denial.
So what are the first, let's say, red flags that you are living in an unhealthy relationship?
Well, the main one would be, the physical abuse. That would be a major red flag. And anything that is making a person feel vulnerable and victimized, in the sense they feel they're being bullied, they don't have freedom of movement, freedom of speech, because a lot of victims are under control. And if you have not got control of your thoughts, your movement, or anything like that, then they are the obvious signs of domestic abuse or violence.
Maybe if you're hiding things from your family and friends regarding the relationship you have, this might be also another sign. So this makes me wonder, what makes us stay in dysfunctional relationships? Why can't we just say it's over and move on?
That's a very difficult question to answer, but a very valid question to ask, because you see, each person has their own reasons behind why they remain to be in a dysfunctional relationship. Some people feel they do not have a choice, and some are financially dependable. There are also there might be reasons in regards to family honor or even the culture or religious aspects. However, from my experience and having worked with victims, a lot is to do with control. The one partner or family member taking control and the victim not having the physical, mental, financial, or emotional strength to walk away, because unfortunately, some do not feel they are worthy. They are afraid that their freedom will cost them their life or someone they care about immensely. It might cost their life. There is also the idea where the victim may feel they are not good enough, and having someone with them, even if that means to stay in a dysfunctional relationship, in a domestically violent relationship, means they won't be alone, and they at least have someone with them that, even though it's aggressive or abusive, nevertheless is present. And as odd as that sounds, this is what I have come across, unfortunately. They feel stuck or trapped, or they do not know who to turn to.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
How good are vitamin C supplements? Usually only a small proportion of vitamin C actually reaches your cells and has a positive effect. Whereas the high absorption levels of Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C help maintain optimal vitamin C levels in your body and strengthen your immune system. Now get 10% off when you choose Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C capsules. Just quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Do you suffer from pain? B-Cure Laser, a home-use CE-approved medical device for the effective treatment of pain, is now available in the UK. The results of a double-blind trial has shown that B-Cure Laser offers a significant reduction in pain compared to the placebo group. To get your special B-Cure offer now, call free on 0808 501 5122 or Google Radio Pro London. B-Cure Laser.
The station that makes you feel good.
So do you have a particular story, a particular case that maybe you've worked with that person that was abused, or maybe you've just read about it? Any particular stories that you think it's important to share with anyone who's listening and might be suffering by of domestic abuse?
Well, there was one case where a lady had come from a foreign country, and she had an arranged marriage, and she felt that she was all alone here. And it wasn't just her partner that was being abusive, but she was getting a lot of psychological abuse from her mother-in-law, and she didn't know who to turn to. She did turn to the community for advice, and they then advised her to turn to a charity, and she soon realized some of the behavior that was acceptable from her culture was unacceptable to her. It was just something that was always covered up by tradition and culture, that a woman's place and what a woman should be doing and how she doesn't have that freedom of speech. And she put up with it for a long while until it became too much for her, and it was traumatizing her because she didn't have freedom to even express her views. And that was just one small case that I came across. And soon after, she was able, even the fact that to leave her partner and leave the family would tarnish her family name. And that was her biggest fear. She didn't want to tarnish her family's name, because it wasn't just about her, it was about the whole of her family relationships that would have been tarnished. And that was her biggest fear. But she was able to move out of that situation. But then she found that the other thing that was holding her back was that if she left, she would be deported back to her home country. But she was able to find asylum here and get the support that she needed eventually.
So this sounds like a very sad story, and for certain there are some details that are quite disturbing. So thank you for not sharing all of these. But I'm just wondering, because in this situation, the person who was abused managed to find a way. What's happening with families with children, for example? How does it affect the children, and how hard it is to find a solution when you have children?
Well, this, as you know, anyone that knows me knows that my strength comes from wanting to serve children and help them as much as I can. And I am sure it's the same for you, because you must feel that often in the field that we work in, generally we want to help the vulnerable as much as we can. And when we hear about cases and the impact this has on children, it's quite traumatizing to listen to. So if you imagine that what trauma people go through just listening to the story, the range of mental health conditions often include post-traumatic stress disorder for children and anxiety, and sometimes even stress, depression, and in some extreme cases, thoughts of actual attempts of suicide. So it can have a huge impact on them, because the domestic violence or abuse that children have witnessed can have a very serious risk for long-term physical and mental as well as emotional problems. And when children are exposed to such atrocities and they witness the violence between their parent carers, studies have shown that they may also be at a greater risk of being violent in the future relationships. And this, of course, is not always necessarily the case, I understand. However, one must understand the way the brain works. It is learned behavior. And also, the main concern, more than anything, that I would like to make your audience very much aware of is that in relationships where there is domestic violence or abuse, being witnessed by a child or a young adult, in about 3/4 of cases of abusive incidents, about half of these in aggressive families, the child too has probably been beaten, sexually harassed or abused, and certainly emotionally abused. And there are quite disturbing statistics, and well, not that you would like to, but you can imagine the trauma and impact that may have on a child. It's very disturbing.
So what can we do in this situation? Let's picture this scenario. I am a mom, I have 3 children, and I can see that my husband is abusing me. What can I do?
Well, the main thing is thinking about what is there for your support and for your children's support. Talking and not being afraid to talk is so important, because the victim should know they're not in this alone. And there are so many support groups, so many things, services out there, which I can tell you a few about, if it's okay to talk about it and go on. So there is so much support available. There is the legal help, the police, the Samaritans, a trustworthy friend. There is help with neighbors, relatives, and trustworthy relatives. There is help with people in charities and organizations that can be at your front door within minutes or hours to assist you and take you away from the danger. They're making schools aware of the harm that is being caused to the individual, the child, is so important. And again, just having these services known and knowing that you can just press a button on and on your phone you have immediate dial
emergency
yes all these things ready. That's the key thing. If you know that you or your children are at risk, turn to someone, talk to someone, and don't be afraid to do it.
And this leads to my next question. If you are in danger and you know you are aware of the fact that you are in danger, but somehow you don't feel ready to leave the relationship, what are a few steps that you can do in order to prepare yourself for the worst, or just to prepare for a tragic potential situation?
So do you mean like ways to cope with it?
Ways to cope with it, but also a few things that you can do in order to make sure that if something happens, you are ready. For example, to maybe have a bag of clothes prepared for yourself and the children, or things like that, that can reassure you that you are to some extent in control.
Yes, and that's the thing. No one should put up with it, of course, but there are many who feel so trapped and they just don't know who to turn to. So if there are listeners who are in an abusive or violent relationship and they need to find ways to cope and what to do, it is first of all really important to know that and recognize that you are in an abusive relationship and that you are the victim, and there is nothing or no fault of your own that has triggered the hurter to cause you the harm they have. And victims of domestic violence or abuse should not be afraid to speak up to family and friends and neighbors or co-workers, as I mentioned before, knowing there is nothing to feel ashamed of. And the best thing one can do is develop a safety plan. Now, if the domestic violence occurs and there is a plan in place, you will know exactly how to deal with things in emergency. So top of the list should be the emergency services. As we mentioned before, the speed dial for emergencies. There should be numbers of charities and organizations to help you. If they cannot, then know that in a plan where you have put your keys, know in the plan where you have put your purse and where it will be. Have an emergency bag of clothes ready. If you have to exit in emergency or immediately, at least those things are in place and you're not wasting time looking for those things. And if children are involved, have code words. Code words are amazing to be able to communicate without causing harm to other members of the family, like the children. And no one has a right to abuse you, so do not be afraid to ask for help. And it is important that in such unfortunate situations, you are aware domestic violence and abuse is a crime. So there are many services available to help families as well as individuals struggling with such matters and seeking community help or keeping a number nearby or on speed dial, and even an indication or a sign to your neighbours where you're switching lights on and off, and code words, or asking your neighbors to keep a lookout and friends to come by to check on you, just unannounced, just to check on you. And the key here is to understand and know that you have nothing to feel embarrassed about, absolutely nothing.
Belinda, you briefly mentioned at the beginning of our conversation about domestic violence against elderly people. How real is this? How real is this abuse?
I think it's very real, and this is where I think humanity has failed, because people so easily forget about the elderly. And I know it has been probably in the last 10 years or so that the media has brought cases to our attention. And generally, in my opinion, I feel the neglect, the physical, emotional, and sometimes I am appalled to say the sexual abuse is overlooked, and also recently the financial exploitation or neglect of welfare and care is frightful to think about. And these are only half the cases we may hear about, but the general effect and impact upon a victim for the elderly is humiliation, the intimidating behavior they experience, the ignoring, the bullying, the isolation. The list of things is endless and can cause the victim to stop eating, their daily patterns in their behavior changes, they are disorientated. I am sure for some the effects are extremely difficult to read and recognize or mistake for symptoms of dementia or mental deterioration. And I think we may need to expand on this, because in regards to the elderly and domestic violence and abuse, because there is just so much to highlight here and the concerns are quite disturbing, as signs are restrained, and I have witnessed myself incidents where the elderly victims have not been allowed to be left alone with me, and it's quite disgusting acts of those who manipulate the elders for financial gain, where wills have been changed and power of attorneys, as I mentioned, and the trust funds, and it is so difficult. And for the elderly, any type of domestic violence or abuse takes a lot of observation and a lot of time to investigate, and it does make it very difficult to prove that this is taking place.
Is there a way to prevent that, do you think? Maybe the society can get more involved. From your experience, what you've seen in your work as a psychotherapist, is there anything that we can do to prevent domestic abuse against elderly people?
I mean, I think now, as I mentioned before, in the last 10 years or so, people are becoming more aware of it, and having more observations and investigations, spontaneous ones, being carried out in care homes is a good idea, because that, I think that's when a lot of evidence is given, and a lot of disclosures are being made about certain organizations, certain establishments that are not taking care of the elderly. And if family members are aware that there's a carer in the home, to make sure that they know exactly what is going on, to make spontaneous and unannounced visits, to make sure that everything is in place, to talk to the elderly if the elderly are able to communicate their emotions and their feelings, and to understand that it's okay for them to be able to speak out, because as I mentioned before, they feel humiliated, and when they feel humiliated, that usually makes them feel quite reserved, and a lot of their symptoms are mistaken.
Maybe another option would be for the community to get involved. So if you're noticing that an elderly person is being abused, or if you notice abuse in any form and shape, you should report this. You should not just watch what's happening, because the situation can be far more complicated than it looks like at first sight.
And it's important to have that safeguarding in place, and adults with care and support needs, that includes disability, health conditions, mental illness, or the learning disabilities that might be present as well. So all this safeguarding, it's really important that people are aware that every adult should be able to live safely despite their age, and free from abuse and neglect. And they are, as you said before, there are millions of cases where also the community should get involved in these things, incidents, if there is something that is concerning anyone or they see something that is out of the usual, they should get involved and not be afraid to do so.
When we talk about domestic abuse, we usually associate this with domestic abuse against women and maybe children. I'm glad we brought up elderly people, but what about the abuse against men? Is there such thing as abuse against men? Have you encountered any situations where you had to maybe offer support to a man who was abused?
I have not had to deal with it myself, but there are different types of domestic abuse against men, of course, and you're right, it is usually a case where people associate it with a certain gender, but most men do not believe or feel they are a victim until sometime after they no longer have the control. And that's what it comes down to, people understanding what domestic violence and domestic abuse is, and it's not just about physical abuse, it also includes emotional and psychological cohesive control and isolating people. And if they feel that they are being groomed in a certain way, and they should know too that they are a victim, and if they feel that they are having this psychological or physical, sexual or financial abuse put upon them, that controlling behavior can be in a range of acts that make the person feel subordinate and dependent by isolating them from the sources of the support that they have and exploiting their resources and their capabilities and their personal pain, taking away their independence and regulating that person's everyday behavior. This cohesive behavior is an act or a pattern, or there's acts of assault or threats or humiliation or intimidation or other abuse that is used to harm, punish or frighten their victim, whether this is a man or a woman or the elderly. All these things do take place. And I just recalled, I did come across a particular case which was abusive in a homosexual relationship. But it can happen to any man, no matter what background or gender or sexuality. It could be any background, really. It doesn't matter. So
the station that makes you feel good.
Galar Light is the quantum energy emitted from the universe, from the sun and stars. Now, Tom Palladino, a humanitarian and Scalar Light researcher, has created the world's only Scalar Light healing system, a system that can bring long-distance healing and wellness to humans, pets, and plants via a photograph. Get your free 15-day trial now at scalarlight.com or click on the Scalar Light banner on the UK Health Radio website.
Shields like masks are top of mind right now, but did you know you have inner armor working constantly to protect you from pathogens? It keeps you healthy and thriving. It's your immune system. Ion Gut triggers the body's natural ability to support gut strength all year long, so your immune system can protect you when you need it the most. How are you treating your inner armor? Visit uk.ionbiome.com to learn more. Ion Gut. Protect what protects you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So what would you say are the psychological effects, like long-term and short-term effects of abuse?
Intimidation is a psychological effect, and withholding affection or just giving it as a reward and turning other people, even the children, parent alienation, and turning children and friends and family members against that person, against the victim, and being constantly being insulted and repeatedly being belittled and keeping that person awake. All these things are the psychological effects that people don't realize are the psychological effects. And those who are misfortunate to go through such trauma and experience domestic violence or abuse, they have a significantly higher risk of experiencing a range of mental, emotional, and physical scars. And a lot of the time, they can't identify why they feel this way. They accept the person's that behavior being a part of the person, and they don't realize that it's not acceptable. And the depression or the stress or whatever's leading them to sometimes even use substance abuse and addictions and whatever the case may be, they've got to look deeper into what is acceptable for them. And if they don't want to treat others that way, it's not acceptable for them to be treated that way. And they should be able to identify within themselves how that makes them feel, how the other person makes them feel.
I know I've mentioned at the beginning of our conversation the myths around domestic abuse. And one of them is the fact that the victim is thinking always to themselves, maybe abuse is my fault, maybe I've done something wrong.
Yes.
Can an abuser actually change?
Yes, they can, but this may take a lot of counseling. Again, it depends on wanting to get that help and if they can themselves recognize that they are the hurter. Some people don't even recognize that they're doing anything wrong, and they accept it. And some who have been in long-term relationships, for example, feel the person has changed and the domestic violence or abuse has come later on, and they usually seek counseling. And it is possible in those cases for there to be change. So the answer is yes, it is possible.
So because you said it is possible, I was just curious to learn more about the recovery path. So what can psychotherapy do? What can you do for a person who's being abused, and then for a person who's an abuser? What's the intervention there?
Okay, so psychotherapy can help victims to overcome any sort of barriers, especially if they remain to be in the domestic violent or abusive relationship. So it doesn't matter which party it is or who it is, but it's assisting the person to overcome the shame or denial and the fear of leaving or having left the abuser or having been the abuser. And often when the hurter isolates their victims or cutting them off contacts or family and friends, victims might worry that they have no one to turn to, and with therapy they are not so reliant on the hurter. Now, I must point out, going back to your previous question, although it is possible for the abuser or the hurter to change, depending on the circumstances, of course, if it's an extreme case where emergency services are involved and police are involved and the victim's life has been under threat, of course you would not have those two people in the same room. It becomes a police investigation, because as I mentioned, domestic violence and abuse is a crime. And it depends on how extreme this is. Now, often, and it's often that I have worked with the victims rather than the hurter, But often victims do worry about how they are going to approach a therapist or a psychotherapist, because they don't like to get other services and especially the police involved. And when we do have cases like that, it's very sensitive, but we do have to inform the charities or emergency services, again, depending on the case. But psychotherapy itself, it helps regain the self-confidence, and it does assist people in detaching them from their circumstances. So, I mean, I ensure working with such cases that are so sensitive that I work safely, ethically, and within the legal requirements, and making sure that safeguarding procedures are all in place. And I mean, ensuring each case is handled independently and not generally, and working through the different and relevant risk assessment tools, and ensuring all affiliated bodies are involved, especially if children are involved, because safeguarding is key. And it is so important not to abandon the victim, but to have all suitable services available and accessible. And the treatment or therapy can help a person to overcome the trauma. It can support a person to regain control of their life and empower the person to control their life and understand what it means to have a healthy relationship and to rebuild a person's self-esteem, so they can know what it means to have self-value and have that self-worth and that self-respect and that self-love.
You mentioned that you mostly work with people who were abused and not so much with abusers. Any idea why the abusers don't come to therapy? What's your thought on that?
Again, they are in denial. They do not accept that they have done anything wrong. A lot of the abusers cannot recognize that they have done anything wrong because they feel they like to be in control, which they, majority of the time, that's why they're the abuser. And they just can't recognize it. In fact, there's been cases where people have actually felt that they are the victims themselves, being the abuser. So very narcissistic characteristics, and that's quite frightening when they can't identify that they have done anything wrong.
Belinda, we're getting close to the end of the show, and I think it's important to draw one conclusion for today's intervention. What will that be? What do people need to know in terms of domestic violence?
I think more importantly, that nobody should control your mindset. You've got to know that as a victim, as a person who is living with someone who's being abusive or violent, that you are in control and there is support available, and there's so much more that you can do for yourself, and not be afraid to come forward to speak out. And there's nothing at all to be ashamed of, because you've got to reconnect with what your self-value is and what your worth is. And if children are involved, then please, please seek help.
What if someone wants to seek your help and ask for your support? Where can people find you on social media?
You can find me at Serene Lifestyles. My name is spelled B-E-L-Y-N-D-E-R. And it's Walia, W-A-L-I-A. It's Belinda Walia as Serene Lifestyles. And people can contact me via email. So that's solutions@serenelifestyles.com. And you will usually find me on most social media platforms.
Thank you so much, Bellinger, for today.
Thank you, Andrea.
I hope you enjoyed your time with us, and we're looking forward to seeing you and listening to you soon.
Thank you ever so much.
The psychological effects of violence can impact your lifetime perception on your relationships, on how your relationship should be like, and how you should behave, and what decisions you should make. This 2005 ballad reached the top of the charts and became an international hit. It describes the lasting impact of growing up with psychological abuse. Clary Clarkson attributes her overcautious, untrusting tendencies and fear of taking chances to her father. The harsh criticism she endured has left her with a deep sense of shame. Here she is now, Kelly Clarkson with Because of You. Until next time, may we hear only good things.
I will not make the same mistakes that you did. I will not let myself cause my heart so much misery. I will not break the way you did. You fell so hard. Too long before you point it out. I cannot cry because I know that's weakness in your eyes. I'm forced to fake a smile, a laugh every day of my life.
Because of you.